And although this is a first reading, I know a number of us want to make comments. Commissioner Fritz, you're on the line.
Yes, thank you everybody who came in today to testify. Thank you for the presentation and for all the staff who've worked on this very diligently. I came into this hearing thinking that I was going to vote no on this item. I'm really distressed that it's taken 2 years, that we have not kept our promises to the community, that we've changed what we said we were going to do. And I'm humbled by the testimony that I've heard today that people in the community are willing to give us yet another chance to try to get this right. And so I've been persuaded by the community members who came in to testify, and I plan to vote yes next week.
Glad to hear that. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Hardesty?
I agree with Commissioner Fritz and many of the speakers today. Man, is it a long, long time getting to this point. I know that the intentions around this program are lofty and good, and I believe that me and my colleagues here on the council have a responsibility to make sure that we live up to what the billing is on this particular project. I've already volunteered my office to assist Prosper Portland in developing the RFP. I want to be comfortable to be able to look any community member in the eye and say that this program finally is doing what we intended it to do. So I look forward to the vote next week. God willing, I'll be here and I'll be supporting moving forward with this effort. So I appreciate the hard work that's gone into this. I know that there's still some uncertainty around continuous financing, and so we will continue to have that conversation happen out in the public and in the public eye. But for me, what I said earlier is I'm so tired about pre-apprenticeship and apprenticeship programs that never quite get over the hump. And if we don't figure out a way to get over the hump this time, then it's going to be a real missed opportunity. Thank you.
I'd like to thank everybody who came today. Thank you for your time.
Could I vote? I'm sorry.
Oh, we're not voting. We're just sharing.
Did you have remarks?
If you had remarks, I'll defer to you first.
I did have a few remarks. Sorry.
Yeah, please, Commissioner Daly.
Sorry about that, Mayor.
No worries.
Well, I will just briefly say that the city's utilization rates of women and minority contractors is something that became of great interest to me during my campaign. It's one of those things that's really pretty hidden from public view, and I was shocked to find out just how abysmally low those rates were. We talk a lot about equity at the City of Portland, and there's a lot more talk than action. So I see this program is really putting our money where our mouth is, and recognizing how we invest public dollars can help or hurt communities and can have huge impact. The CEIP conversation was a very challenging conversation. I wasn't entirely satisfied with the outcome, as everyone involved is painfully aware of. But I think that this program builds on the great work that was done by Maui, and that this represents a meaningful commitment by the city, support of Portland to building capacity, which is, I think, a critical component that's often missing. You can't just open up opportunity when it's been denied for decades or forever without helping communities build their capacity and ultimately diversify the construction trades workforce. So I'm very, very pleased with this.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner Daly. And again, I want to thank everybody for their testimony. And colleagues, I want to make clear, we all recognize that historical disparities exist in the construction industry, and they have prevented equity in construction opportunities for disadvantaged, minority-owned, women-owned, emerging small businesses and service disabled, veteran-owned business enterprises, as well as equity in the construction workforce for women and people of color. And we all agree that the city has a responsibility to ensure that public dollars spent benefit the community that the city serves by optimizing diverse community participation in contracting. I believe that the partnership between the city and Prosper Portland to administer this program maximizes the opportunities to achieve the outcomes of the program with the funds that exist and starts getting those funds out the door ASAP. The COEP program was authorized back in November of 2017. And while I agree with everyone that 2 years is too long to have kept the construction community and our business and our workforce development partners waiting, I'm glad that we're now moving forward to distribute those funds as promised. As you heard from some testimony, there have been people in this room who have been working on this issue for 2 decades. And while I acknowledge that I slowed this program down, and I did it with intentionality, I did it because I believed we would get more funds out the door that are layered if we worked through our partnerships that already exist through Prosper Portland as well as Workforce Oregon. And so while I know people were frustrated that we slowed that process down, I have absolutely no regrets. I believe fundamentally it was the right thing to do. This partnership allows the city to leverage existing systems and programs that Prosper has in place. And we heard from Kimberly Branham, Director Branham, about the Inclusive Business Resource Network, amongst others. They help small firms grow their capacity to provide workforce and business development assistance and utilizes the collective expertise of several bureaus, including OMF, OEHR, and Prosper. I was really interested by some of the testimony that we heard this morning, particularly Mr. Posey said something about this being 1% versus 2% for arts. And I want you to know, I hear what you're saying. And it is my fundamental belief, and frankly, it is my pledge to you and to everyone in this room, that 1% spent wisely and spent accountably, as my colleagues are insisting it be spent, will leverage people into the 99%. That's my goal too. 1% is not sufficient. My vision for this city on an economic front has always been about shared economic prosperity. We're a very prosperous city today. In fact, by some measures, we are the 10th wealthiest city in the United States. But that prosperity is not being shared. And this is one of the best opportunities we have, using the public resources we have and the large-scale projects that are teed up today, to actually get more of our population into a position where they can generate intergenerational wealth for themselves and their families. And it's important that we do that. And so I just wanted to put out that out there. I want to thank everybody for being here. I want to thank my colleagues for listening intently. And I will obviously support this as it comes back to us. So this is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thank you, everyone. Item 33, we will also move to second reading, and that'll go to the regular agenda. We'll read item 46 next, unless my colleagues need to take a 2-minute break. How are we doing?
I just took one.
No, we're going to move 46 forward because it's the same players, and I don't want to have to leave and come back. Why don't you read item 46, please?
Direct the Chief Procurement Officer to sign the Construction Career Pathways Project Framework and commit to continuing to support the regional work group led by Metro.
Colleagues, the Construction Career Pathways Project, as we know from testimony, otherwise known as C2P2, is a Metro-led initiative that seeks collaboration among regional government agencies to achieve consistency in our construction equity programs, policies, and contractual requirements. The city has been participating in a public owner work group convened by Metro that has developed a framework of policy recommendations to support career opportunities for women and people of color in the construction trades. With the resolution before you, the city would endorse the framework and commit to continuing to support this regional initiative. Lester Spittler, the city's chief procurement officer, is here with Rahi Reddy, Metro's director of diversity, equity, and inclusion, who we heard from earlier, to present on the policy recommendations and compare those with existing city policies. Good morning, and thank you for being back again, Rahi.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. glad to be back again so shortly. So we wanted to share some, I will be sharing some overview and highlights of the Construction Career Pathways collaboration, and then I will hand it over to Lester to continue with the specifics for the city. The city, I have to say, again, we want to thank the City of Portland and the OMB office for their incredible support of not only imagining and kind of really developing the frame that you're going to see today, but really being a partner from the very early on to make the case for the region. And as I mentioned in my earlier testimony, the City of Portland has helped co-fund the market study that really made the case for why we need to collaborate across agencies. You have dedicated staff that worked with us for over a year, really hammering out the details of this framework. So I want to just thank Molly Washington and Kathleen Massier for their incredible work of just really being in the driver's seat on this with us. The city of Portland, as we learned through the framework deliberations, has actually been a leader in the region on raising the issues of workforce inequities in the construction sector and investing early on in infrastructure for tracking and reporting and being an early adopter of this idea of having goals on our construction projects. So we thank you for that early work, and we look forward to, you know, leaping from there to a much more impactful opportunities in the region. The Construction Careers Pathways Framework really aims to capture the opportunity of publicly funded projects to advance racial equity by creating career pathways for good construction careers for people of color and women. This work supports many equity goals, as I learned, you know, in the earlier presentation, supports many of the equity goals that agencies are acting on. And for Metro, for us, the center of this work is our strategic plan to advance racial equity, diversity, and inclusion, and construction careers, and convening our regional partners was actually a line item, action item in the plan that was really put on there from community, who said that we have an incredible opportunity right in our hands, and let's make the most of it. So the Construction Career Pathways Project really offers a comprehensive strategy that, number one, increases career opportunities, as I mentioned, for people of color and women in the path to meeting the overall regional demand for a skilled construction workforce. It provides an opportunity for regional collaboration to leverage our collective efforts, establishes consistent recruitment, training, and retention policies, practices, and funding, and creates high road standards in the industry. So how did we get here? Metro and the City of Portland, as I mentioned, co-funded the initial construction workforce market study that was coordinated by Work Systems, but really with the collaboration of so many of the partners you heard from today in among stakeholders. This report was published in 2017, and the recommendations from this report really led to the establishing of an initial public owner work group, which started meeting in July of 2018. And it really represented up here on the timeline, that was really the, you know, the workforce study established the foundation, and then really the public owners got together to say, what can we do with the learnings from this report? So for the past year, this group has used significant input from stakeholders in the industry to develop a construction careers framework that we will be sharing with you today. And with the adoption of the framework, what we're hoping to do is move from, you know, phase one and two and three. We're at phase three right now with policy adoption, and then move into phase four, which is really where the rubber hits the road for us. That is when we will work together with the agencies that have adopted this framework to coordinate our efforts and to make sure that we are holding ourselves and our projects accountable to the public. I want to say that, as you've learned in the many years that you've been engaging in setting goals and working out policies, that you cannot, as public owners, as public agencies, we cannot do this alone. We cannot develop a framework just in a silo. And what we did at Metro is really invest in learning from our community partners, our minority contractors, our general contractors, and our labor partners, to really learn from their perspective and where they sit in the system of what will it take for us to be effective throughout the region. We work closely with the building trades and the carpenters unions, with the workforce advocacy and community, direct community-based organizations, with NAMAC, PBDG, and had some conversations with Latino Build. And we've had a consistently along the way a strategic partnership with Work Systems to make sure that we've leveraged their ability to do market research and economic research as they're tasked to do in our region. And from that, we will, you know, Lester's going to share more specifics of the framework, but pivoting from the engagement and getting input, we also wanted to bring this framework to you with some work and kind of like a pledge of support from all the people that are going to deliver on these things. And so we're really excited to share in this slide. We have over 36 organizations that have signed a pledge supporting the Construction Careers Framework. We also are coming to you today with a formal adoption from Metro, Multnomah County, Prosper Portland, and we expect numerous other agencies to come online as well.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty.
Frank, I do have a question about your pledge of support. What does the pledge of support imply?
The pledge of support basically says we support the elements of the framework, and we support the ability, you know, of this regional collaboration to move forward with these elements of the framework that Lester is going to share with you.
To articulate, I just want to say that there's an imbalance of power on this, these stakeholder pledges of support, and so I just want to make sure that the people who have the power are actually putting resources in, and the people who don't have the power will be benefiting from those resources that will be targeted in this manner.
I agree with you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Rahi. Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Lester Spitley, the City's Chief Procurement Officer. Before I get into comparing the policy recommendations with existing city policy, I just want to say that I'm humbled by the person next to me, and I think we all truly appreciate, you know, her and her team's leadership with this initiative. Sabrina and Tiffany, I believe, are in the room, as well as some others. And I just want to say, you know, I'm humbled and honored and privileged to be here, to be the one to present. There's a lot of people that have come before me that deserve a lot of credit. Rahi mentioned Molly Washington and Kathleen Massier there in the room. They deserve a lot of credit for this initiative and the work that it's done to date. So what I'm going to do over the next couple of slides is I'm going to review the 7 policy recommendations in the framework with existing city policy. And before I get into that, when I use the term women in these slides, I want to say that that includes cisgendered women, transgendered women, and female-identified persons. So the policy recommendation number 1 is to set clear workforce diversity goals. 20% of the total work hours in each trade need to be performed by state-registered apprentices. That is a requirement today for our construction contracts that are over $200,000. The C2P2 framework has also proposed setting minimum percentages for women and people of color at both the apprenticeship and journey level. They're 14% for women and 25% for people of color are higher than the city's goals today. So there is a 7-year ramp-up period for which we intend to increase those goals over time to meet the 7-year ramp-up period. But I just want to say today our goals are not quite at that level.
7 years? Why is it going to take 7 years to ramp up?
That was a negotiation with our public agencies looking at where we are today. Multnomah County on the courthouse project, tremendous partners, and they've invested, and they're, for example, on the women goals are about 10%. So even agencies that are putting a lot of effort and program are not exactly at the 14%. So what we discussed was having a 7-year ramp-up period, but reevaluating these goals at 2 years to see if we collectively invest, if we can create the scale that we need in the workforce side to see where we are. So we've built in some wiggle room in there to hopefully we will get there sooner, but we want to be realistic.
Certainly with the city's COEP program, we hope to be able to influence that and achieve those goals sooner. So this next policy recommendation, and these two, the theme of these is really creating demand for those women and the people of color in the construction workforce. It recommends a 3-tiered approach for diversity goals, and our current city policy also has a 3-tiered approach. It differs slightly in the monetary thresholds with what C2P2 is recommending, but it's not very far off. These next two, the motivation is really to increase the accountability. So track and review progress on goals, recommendation that the agencies acquire and implement B2G Now and LCP Tracker. The city acquired and implemented those two systems in late 2017, so we're already capturing that data, tracking, and reporting on it. Develop a workforce agreement. This is a recommendation that the local agencies work together to develop and agree on a unified agreement that would apply across all agencies. We currently have the CEIP, which applies to projects between 10 and 25 million, and the CBA, which is the Community Benefits Agreement, that applies to projects $25 million and above. We are participating in those negotiations to develop that uniform regional agreement, so we're hoping to be able to continue to support that effort. The fifth policy recommendation is to implement worksite anti-harassment and culture change strategies. The city has contractual requirements already that require contractors to have anti-harassment policies and retention strategies in place to retain and recruit and retain people of color and women workers. Six, collectively invest in workforce supply. Again, this is the motivation for this one is to really increase the supply. So we heard today about the COEP. The city has already adopted policy to dedicate 1% of our construction projects for workforce development and business technical assistance. And the last and final policy recommendation is to sign the framework, continue to collaborate and support this effort, which we're here today to ask for your support and authorization to do that.
Is the 1% set aside just for CodeBid certified firms? Are they the only ones that are eligible for those dollars?
No, I think the policy called for those firms to receive the business technical assistance. How those grants are awarded through PROSPER for the city's COEP program will be influenced by the CEIC as well as sort of the forecasted list of projects that we have and the needs of those projects. So, yes, currently the policy is specific to those COBID certified firms.
So I guess that we should talk about whether or not we're limiting, once again, our opportunity to identify, support minority-owned firms. If we're just limiting them to a very small pot of contractors, the outcomes that we're looking for will not be there.
So the recommendation to council today is to authorize us to sign the framework, continue to work with Metro and the other public agencies in the work group. Signing the framework means that the city would simply continue to support and collaborate, but we would also be obligating ourselves to meet those increased workforce goals over the 7-year ramp-up period. A few of the recommendations require continued collaboration to operationalize, which we hope to be able to continue to support and help out. If there's any questions, we're here and there's other folks in the chambers.
Any questions at this point? We have, why don't you cool your heels? We have one invited panelist.
Okay.
We have Metro Councilor Sam Chase is here this morning. Thank you for your patience. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Sam Chase with Metro Council, and really want to come and emphasize our support at Metro to continue this work, and the efforts that we have seen from our cities and our region and Metro to date are not enough. We still have this incredible disparity in our economy, where we have this booming construction economy, yet our communities of color and women are left out of the construction trades. We are really past missing an opportunity, an economic opportunity as well, because our entire community benefits if we are able to create more jobs and a greater supply of workers in our workforce. That helps all of us with the construction cost, the incredible increasing construction cost that is affecting our affordable housing and many other projects throughout our region. And now is the time to act. And I think that even the questions I'm hearing here and the participation of the City of Portland in this work is I think, helping build an even stronger program. And it's really important that we are thinking regionally, because we have the economy of Portland, but we also have the entire region. And when we can bring the region on board, that increases our economic opportunities to advance programs like this by threefold. So it's important that we are modeling here how this program can work, and working together and signing up all together, holding hands to do this work. And those other jurisdictions around the region that are not as advanced in doing this work, that are still in some places at the starting line in terms of really addressing workforce equity, I think can be brought into the fold. And it creates an opportunity for some of those smaller cities, King City or Forest Grove or other places where they don't have the capacity to do this work. And they should have the capacity to do it, but they don't. And this provides an opportunity for them to advance that work. And so I think it's so important here to have the City of Portland on board, and for us to be collaborating and bringing in those other economies from around our region. So I really am just here to say that the entire Metro Council is strongly behind doing and continuing this work, and continuing to improve this work, and addressing some of these the questions and challenges that we will continue to have to move forward with. But I thank you for your participation and interest in this program.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Any questions? Very good. Thank you. Thanks. Appreciate it. Public testimony, Keila.
One person signed up,
very
Diana
good.
Gutman.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Diana Gutman. I go by she, her, hers pronouns. And I hear a lot of really good things about the Construction Careers Pathway Program, and so overall I am in support of this, but I do have a few questions that I would like to be able to ask. My first question was, I was curious about what the high road standard is. I want to know what a little more about what they mean by high road standard. What is that standard? There wasn't much clarification. My next question is in regards to Commissioner Hardesty's question, and I thank you for asking about why it's been 7 years. My follow-up question is, has the reevaluation taken place during that 7 years? They said every 2 years they would do a reevaluation. Has that actually happened? And if so, what were the findings? Where's the data for that? And then lastly, the anti-harassment policy, I think, is a very, very important policy, especially when you're working with people from different walks of background, different walks of life. And so in order to really advocate for people's needs, I was wondering, what is in place with the anti-harassment policy? Is there a mandate training that this program is offering to everyone who participates in the program? are they also required to participate in the anti-harassment policy? And then what steps and procedures are to be taken should someone come forward and express that they have experienced harassment? How is the anti-harassment policy going to be enforced?
Glad you asked some good questions.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your questions.
And I don't know if Lester or staff want to come back up and address some of those questions.
Yeah, I'd like to get somebody to come up and try to answer.
So first of all, Lester, what is the high road standard? Could you give us a little more detail on that?
Okay. I'll answer the high road standards. First of all, those are excellent questions, and we always love the opportunity to come back and talk more. So in terms of high road standards and why I mentioned it, high road standards are really about not any job on construction is a good job. And high road standards really refer to making sure that contractors are providing quality and good wages, health benefits for the employees, protections and safety training on the job, and in addition to that, and what we've learned from the market study, making sure that they're doing what they can to ensure that workers have the supports that they need to stay on the job, so additional assistance, especially for vulnerable workers who may not have the resources to have tool belts or be able to pay for childcare, and to make sure that the workplace is a safe and welcoming workplace and to create those investments. And high road standards lead to construction careers as opposed to just any job. And so we really see the framework as collectively supporting those kinds of standards.
So if I may try to do that in layman's terms. Yeah. So basically, we're not underwriting flaggers and jobs that don't lead to living wage employment opportunities, right? That's it. Yeah. Is that accurate?
Yeah. And collectively, as part of the regional collaboration, what we're interested in doing is making sure we're able to track and monitor what is happening to workers on these jobs. And you can do a wage analysis, jobs analysis. And right now, collectively, as public agencies, you may be able to do that on one single project. But there's not, without coming together, we can't do it collectively and see which contractors do tend to keep women and people of color on, you know, basically minimal flagger jobs forever. And really, there's no way to track it over time. And that's what we're hoping to do, is be able to bring more accountability to that.
I applaud the fact that we'll be doing this accountability across governments, because the more governments that are at the table having this conversation, then we don't have contractors trying to game the system, right? Thinking, well, they're going to be easier at the city of Portland, so mm-hmm. I'll just go and get a contract there versus going to Metro. Mm-hmm. I want to really applaud the work that you've done. I know when we've met with Multnomah County and they talked about both the health department building, the Gladys McCoy health department mm-hmm. building, and the new courthouse, how intentional they were in getting the excellent outcomes that they got. Mm-hmm. Lester, at the city, I continue to say that the way that the city of Portland has actually gotten excellent outcomes has been when it has been an oversight committee that has met monthly, that has tracked the numbers, that has held contractors accountable for those outcomes. I haven't heard anything today. Maybe I just don't know about. I know with the collaboration with Metro, I understand that process, but I'm still trying to figure out how do we make sure that we're just not assuming goodwill, but we're actually holding people accountable in real time. And it's probably more to the last conversation that we had rather than this one, because I know you'll be a part of that in some way, shape, or form. But just always mindful that it's so easy to game the system that we have, that without good communication and monthly accountability check-ins, it just doesn't change.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Any further questions? Please call the roll. Resolution.
I want to make sure that Commissioner Fritz can hear us. There's been a delay.
I'm sorry. Commissioner Fritz, did you have any questions before I called the roll?
No, thank you.
Very good.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye.
Resolution's adopted. Thank you, everyone, for your hard work.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have a time-certain item, the appeal. All right. Very good. It'll be quick. Could you read item 34, please?
Appeal of the Southwest Hills Residential League against the hearings officer's decision to approve, with conditions, a one-lot partition with concurrent environmental and plan development review adjacent to 1315 Southwest Broadway Drive.
Folks, you'll remember this is the final vote on this item. I move that the council deny the appeal, uphold the decision of the hearings officer with the amendment to condition B1 as reflected in the decision, and adopt the findings. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Commissioner Udaly. Any further discussion? Call the roll.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hardesty. Udaly.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye.
The motion passes. Anything else, legal counsel, on this item? Legal counsel, is there anything else we need to do on that particular item?
I'm sorry, no.
Very good. Item 39, please. Second reading.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Metro for a total amount of $841,931 for the annual waste reduction plan, recycle at work, and business food waste requirement.
This is a second reading. Colleagues, we've already heard a presentation and public testimony. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Fritz.
I really love this program. Aye.
Hardesty. Udaly.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye.
Ordinance is adopted. Item number 40, also a second reading.
Authorize a matching grant fund not to exceed $460,596 and grant agreements to assist in the cost to purchase and install safety equipment, specifically side guards on garbage and recycling collection vehicles.
Colleagues, I just want to note that I'd asked a number of questions during the first reading, and I want to share just some of the brief answers. First of all, I'd asked a question about legal exposure to the city, and I've been advised by risk management and legal that there is no increased risk exposure to the city, that the haulers assume the risk, and that the standard by which the side guards are installed meets all federal safety standards. Please call the roll.
Fritz.
I think this is necessary and prudent. Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye.
The ordinance is adopted. Next, item 41, also a second reading.
Amend contract with Parametrics, Inc. for the professional engineering services for the Lombard Pump Station Upgrade and Force Main Replacement Project Number E10920 in the amount of $691,373.
Any further discussion on this item? Please call the roll.
Fritz.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye.
The ordinance is adopted. Next item, 43.
Accept bid of MJ Hughes Construction, Inc. for the Tryon Creek at Boone's Ferry Culvert Replacement Project for $4,993,052.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry, did we do 42?
Yeah.
We haven't done
42 yet.
Can you hold for one moment in abeyance? Item number 42, a second reading. Can you please call that?
Authorize a contract with Jacobs Engineering Group, Inc. for professional services for the collections system force main evaluation project for $4,498,823.
Colleagues, this is also a second reading. Any further discussion on this item? Please call the roll.
Fritz.
Shima, this is why you need me to see at your right hand so I can point to things and say we haven't done that one yet. Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Commissioner Fritz, you're 100% right, and you are missed, and we'll look forward to seeing you as early, I hope, as next week. I just want to say I really appreciated the presentation we received on this. I learned a lot from it. I'm sure people in the public who watched it learned as well. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next item back to 43. We've already read it. And good morning. Well, now it's good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Kathleen Brennis-Marua, Procurement Manager for Design and Construction Services, and I'm here to recommend the authorization to enter into a contract with MJ Hughes Construction for the Tryon Creek at Boone's Ferry Culvert Replacement Project. The authorizing ordinance was approved October 2nd, 2019, and the engineer's estimate was $5,360,000. We issued an invitation to bid on October 14th, 2019, and a non-mandatory pre-bid conference was held. 8 contractors attended, 7 primes, and 1 subcontractor. Bids were due on November 21st, 2019, and 4 responsive bids were received. The responsive low bid is from MJ Hughes Construction Incorporated in the amount of $4,993,052, and it's approximately 7% under the engineer's estimate. The city's aspirational 20% subcontractor and supplier utilization goal applied. MJ Hughes met this goal with a commitment to subcontract 20% to contractors certified with the Certification Office for Business Inclusion and Diversity, identified in the report before you. Hughes will self-perform 75% of the work. MJ Hughes Construction is in full compliance with all city contracting requirements, and I hereby recommend you authorize this contract.
Very good. Any further discussions on this item? This is a report. I'll take a motion.
I move the report.
Second.
We have a motion and we have a second from Commissioner Hardesty. Any further discussion? Call the roll.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. Report's accepted. Thank you for the testimony. Item 44, please.
Also, and again, for the record, Kathleen Brennis-Marua.
Oh, we need to read it first. Sorry.
Sorry.
Accept bid of Landis and Landis Construction LLC for the Slough Outfall 100 project for $2,036,001.
All right. And again, for the record, Kathleen Brennis-Marua, Procurement Manager. I'm here to recommend authorization to enter into a contract with Landis and Landis Construction for the Slough Outfall project. The authorizing ordinance was approved September 18th, 2019, and the engineer's estimate was $1,760,000. We issued an invitation to bid on October 31st, 2019, and a mandatory pre-bid conference was held. 9 prime contractors attended. Bids were due on November 21st, 2019, and 5 responsive bids were received. The responsive low bid is from Landis and Landis Construction in the amount of $2,036,001, and it's approximately 16% over the engineer's estimate. The city's aspirational 20% subcontractor and supplier utilization goal applied. Landis and Landis met this goal with a commitment to subcontract 27.8% to contractors certified with the Certification Office for Business Inclusion and Diversity, as identified in the report before you. Landis and Landis will self-perform 59% of the work. Landis and Landis is in full compliance with all city contracting requirements, and I hereby recommend you authorize this contract.
Any questions? I'll accept a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to accept the report. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Fritz.
Thank you for your work. Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Thank you. Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. Report's accepted. Can you please skip to item 49 and read that item, please?
Authorize a contract for $4 million with Conduent State and Local Solutions, Inc. to provide ongoing photographic traffic enforcement services for the city's current photographic enforcement system.
Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. So I really hate to do this, but in the interest of giving us a lunch break, because I think this might be a longer conversation, I'm very inclined to bring it back next week. How do my colleagues feel about that?
I certainly do have questions about this that I would hope
so
to get answered before we came back here, because, yes,
I support.
So move it. Okay. Yeah. I'm really sorry, but
very good. So
we are so far behind.
I support it, but I think what I'm hearing, this makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So without objection, we'll return it to Commissioner.
I'm not feeling well.
Or do you want to just carry it over till next week?
I think we're going to carry it over till next week. I'm not feeling well, and I have meetings until 8 o'clock tonight, so I really do need to make sure I get a lunch break. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you for your patience, and we'll
and
see
maybe
you.
Maybe I'll just give you a preview. One of my questions is going to be, I thought that last year you told us that you were going to go out for RFP, and now you're back asking for an extension, so I'm going to want to follow on that.
Yes, ma'am.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next item 45, please.
Adopt revised debt management policy, a component of the city's comprehensive financial management policies to address the city's issuance and management of debt.
Colleagues, the proposed legislation updates the city's debt management policy, which provides the framework for the management of the city's debt financing activity. As part of the normal procedures, the debt management policy is periodically updated. The proposed policy update addresses recent regulatory changes and modifies some debt management practices to be consistent with current market standards. The city's debt manager, Matt Girac, is here to present on the updates to the policy and answer any questions. And as I will remind everybody, as the former state treasurer, debt is sexy. Take it away.
Not much in terms of presentation. I want to just be here to answer any questions. There was an exhibit provided in the council resolution that provided a summary of any of the changes, and most of them are just really just updates to current market standards and also addressing the current regulatory environment. So if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
I actually really don't have questions. I know it was such a thorough report that it, and I and my Derek in my office got a couple of questions that I had answered, and I'm just good. How weird is that? That I actually know what I know this.
Matt, thank you. And as you know, it's important that we do bring our policies into alignment with both the financial best practices and what's going on in the debt market. And you're staying on top of it. And I truly do understand how important it is and how much work goes into monitoring and then making those true-ups. So thank you for that. Is there any further discussion on that item? Is there public testimony on this item?
Two people signed up, Charles Bridge Crane Johnson and Maggie.
Okay, I'm going to hold you to the particular resolution that is before us. It is a debt management principles update. Go for it.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Charles Bridge Crane Johnson, and I have to dispute the entire premise of this, that debt is sexy. Retiring debt is sexy. Getting ultra low interest rates is sexy. Great debt deals are sexy, but many Americans are burdened with unsexy debt.
Stipulated.
So,
stipulated.
You know, we've had, it's interesting because with maybe even earlier in your career, Mayor, and other mayors, we've had great feedback from some great debt deals where we've been able to retire some things. I'm confident that there's more of them in the report, so I look forward to your accepting the report and all of you being on your toes to make sure that we only get the sexiest debt.
That's always been the goal. Thank you, sir. Maggie, good afternoon.
I agree that, you know, having a AAA rating is really important because it allows you to borrow. So sensible debt management. There's times when you need to borrow money for an emergency, but if you think about whether it's climate crisis, homeless emergency, or if there was an earthquake or something where you needed to borrow money very badly. But, you know, with the homeless crisis, you can stand up and say there's a homeless emergency and sit back down in your chair and let it accumulate for years. And that's a different kind of debt. That's a social debt. And that's one that gets more and more expensive as time goes on. So let's think of it in those terms, not just financial debt, but social debt.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Maggie, now you've piqued my interest on this. And I want to give you just a couple of examples of why I believe this debt management issue is super important. And I'll be brief. But we had the Great Recession.
and the federal government artificially established what were effectively 0% interest rates on debt. And at that time, what people were seeing was a huge opportunity created by the federal government to issue debt for critically important long-term public goods. And in some jurisdictions, the public good was the purchase of affordable housing. In other places, they took the opportunity to address their backlog on capital deferred maintenance, the kind we're really struggling with right now in the Parks Bureau and other civic infrastructure, including our utilities. And I have always felt that, and one other example was what was called the Oregon Opportunity Initiative to issue debt at effectively zero rates of interest at the state level, invest it in a stock market which had already crashed and had really only one way to go, which was up, and then use that as a permanent growing endowment for student financial aid and job creation. And I would argue we missed all of those opportunities. And that's and I still remember how badly we missed those opportunities and what we could have done had we been more thoughtful about the issuance of debt during that time period when the federal government was artificially squeezing those rates. So I always admire the fact that we have a really good debt management team here at the City of Portland, and I know that their number one job is to be fiscally prudent, fiscally responsible, and conservative to maintain that credit rating that Charles mentioned, because we want those dollars to go as far as possible, but I also want them to look for the opportunities. I think there is a such thing as being too conservative with the use of the debt tool. And so that's just sort of my two cents on
that. Can I say one thing, since I've got 1 minute left related to that? And that is that it's wonderful with the Blackburn and with the Bouchon that you want to create jobs. But if you're creating jobs just to cycle people in and out of homelessness and have a handful of supportive housing people on the top floor, you have not spent the dollars well. I consider that fraud. Spend the dollars well in terms of if you're going to spend millions of dollars retrofitting a whole building, then you make that whole building permanent supportive housing.
So, Maggie, you do know that that's a county building?
I didn't know.
It's a county building, so you're advocating with the wrong body. We want to help with that building, okay, but it is not our building. We will just be a community partner.
Okay, yeah, but, you know, building a whole building
When we look at the debt picture from the 2012 treasurer election, it would have been interesting if Cameron Witten could have won, but if ever the state approves a salary of $129,000 for the treasurer, I hope you might consider doing a good job there again.
I think it was 72 a year to manage a $90 billion portfolio.
True.
Call the roll. It's 350 in Delaware. She may have had to leave the line. Let me reread this text one moment.
I have called the roll and I didn't hear it.
There we are. Okay, thank you.
The voice from the heavens.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm watching you.
Fritz.
We can hear you.
I'm sorry.
Commissioner Fritz, did you cast your vote for the resolution?
Can you talk louder? Because on the phone, it's very difficult to hear.
I'm sorry. We're taking a vote on the resolution. How do you vote?
I'm just going to vote aye because I can't hear properly.
That works.
Artisty.
Very trusting, are you? Aye.
You Daly.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye, and I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for just raising my salary.
I was trying to think, what items do we want
to immediately
bring?
Next item, 47, second reading.
Approve funding recommendations made by Children's Levy Allocation Committee to renew the Community Child Care Initiative for July 1st, 2020 through June 30, 2023.
Colleagues, this is also a second reading. We've had a presentation, taken public testimony. Any further discussion? Seeing none, call the roll.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. Thank you. Last item number 48, please.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County to provide financial and technical resources to assist with the county's project Multnomah County Liquid Fossil Fuels Inventory Assessment not to exceed $50,000.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. As you know, we are excited about partnering with Multnomah County to conduct a study to determine how to move forward on our critical energy infrastructure hub activity. And we have staff here that will present the details. I would encourage, due to the length of this morning's session, that brevity would be appreciated, and I think we're all very knowledgeable about the necessity of this particular partnership and how it's going to help us as we start making policy decisions around the critical energy.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, my name is Jonna Papa-Thimiu, and I'm the Planning, Policy, and Community Programs Manager at the Bureau of Emergency Management.
Good morning. I'm Mike Phillips, Disaster Response Planner for the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management.
Thanks, Mike.
So, in the interest of time, and as Commissioner Hardesty noted, I think we're familiar with massive risks in the critical energy infrastructure hub. In a catastrophic earthquake, we would expect to see fires, spilled fuel that would have a terrible impact on human health and the environment, would be a setback to our recovery, and could take decades to clean up. The purpose of this study is to really to ensure that the public does not bear the cost of what is a very predictable catastrophe. So it would estimate the effects, like the gallons that we might expect to see spilled. It would put a dollar amount on the economic impacts, like the cost to clean up. And then it would describe what of those costs are covered by existing insurance or federal programs, and what is the gap that we need to find another way to ensure that we're protected from paying for it. I think of note, we were grateful for input from the county and from community groups in writing the scope of work. And our intent is, when we have a draft, to go back to the community, describe the expected impacts that we see in the draft, and to ask other adjacent jurisdictions, community members, and formal government-to-government consultation with tribes for their input before we finalize the work. And I'm going to let Mike talk for just a minute about the logistics.
Just briefly, what the IGA does is actually the city will be providing matching funds to Multnomah County. Multnomah County will publicly and competitively select a competent consultant to do the work, but the contract administration will be joint between Portland Bureau of Emergency Management and Multnomah County's Bureau of Sustainability. So there will be collaboration throughout the project, reviewing the deliverables and also reviewing the final product.
Commissioner Hersey.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor, I just want to thank you and the rest of the City Council for investing this $50,000 to partner with Multnomah County. Clearly, none of us could do this on our own. We know that in a major disaster, the walls and the structures that we operate in will come down, because we will have to actually take care of our people. I also hope that out of this, we get some advice about whether or not ensuring that the critical energy infrastructure has their own fire suppression team, as an example, right? Because quite frankly, my folks don't have the training or the equipment to put out a fire that would be caused by an industrial oil spill in the city of Portland. So I'm hopeful that this will be very informative for us to help us put pieces in place that will protect our people and our property here in Portland. So thank you. Thank you both.
Very good. Yeah. Any further questions? Public testimony, Keelan?
We've had three people sign up. I believe some have left. Lightning signed up, Diana Gutman, and Maggie.
Diana's still here. Come on up. Thank you.
Sorry, you had to wait so long.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Diana. I go by she, her, hers pronouns. And I think that this is something that is very beneficial for our city. I'm actually from Multnomah County, and so I'm very happy and proud to see this collaboration effort here today. I'm really thankful to our presenters for bringing all this information forward. I did have some questions. I was wondering how they are going to go about reaching out to the community and engaging the community on the updates that they were talking about. We never want natural disasters to happen. These unpredictable things are something that we plan for, but we never hope for. And back when Commissioner Saltzman was on the council, he actually was a big advocacy for making sure the buildings in Portland were up to code, making sure we were ready for those natural disasters should it ever happen. Because when it does, our city is going to be entirely crippled, and we are going to have to make snap quick decisions. So in order to have a plan in place, I think, for one, it is very wise. And so it is so exciting to see this coming forward. And then lastly, it kind of piggybacks off of Commissioner Hardesty with the infrastructure, but will there be training that is going to be available for emergency response systems? Will there be training provided to the general public when these updates are coming down so everyone can be on the same page and work together should the day ever come?
Thank you.
Let me just say, yes, there will be the public will be informed as soon as the study has been done. The Portland Bureau of Emergency Management actually is responsible for helping us develop our resiliency plan. So as a city, we're already involved in that process. The reality is that it will take all of us, right? And the good news is that Portlanders respond very effectively in emergencies, right? I saw it when Katrina happened. I've seen it a couple of other times with big protests. Please go to Portland Bureau of Emergency Management, and then you can get more information about staying in the loop as this process continues on.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
And there's always a good opportunity here to plug the neighborhood emergency response teams, which are volunteer teams at the neighborhood level. It's run through the Office of Emergency Management, and I think the best example that I saw, and I know you were there as well, Commissioner, when the water main blew up in northeast Portland, and the neighborhood emergency response folks were out there almost instantaneously directing traffic, encouraging people not to get in the water, and giving information on behalf of the city. And that to me was a real up close and personal validation of that program. And I know that it could be expanded to include this information once the study's completed.
I think that's great. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Any further discussion on this item? This is an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Fritz.
I appreciate the mayor finding the money for this in the fall bump and everybody's support on council. I'm also very glad that we are partnering with Multnomah County and doing this in a multi-jurisdictional way. Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
I'm happy to support this. I'm really thrilled that we're moving forward on it. This has been a area of concern of mine for years, and as I like to remind people that think they're going to be traveling on our river in the event of a earthquake, our river could be on fire if we don't deal with this hazard. I vote aye.
And Keelan, that covers the agenda. We jumped around a bit, but I don't think I missed anything. We're adjourned.